shock, and her glasses flashed furiously. "How dare you! Might have broken your neck!" "It wasn't his fault, Professor." "Be quiet, Miss Patchill!" "But Malfoy..." "That's enough, Mr. Weasley! Potter, follow me! Now!" Harry caught sight of Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle's triumphant faces as he left, walking numbly in Professor McGonagall's wake as she strode toward the castle. He was going to be expelled. He just knew it. He wanted to say something to defend himself, but there seemed to be something wrong with his voice. Professor McGonagall was sweeping along without even looking at him. He had to jog to keep up. Now he'd done it. He hadn't even lasted 2 weeks. He'd be packing his bag in 10 minutes. What would the Dursleys say when he turned up on the doorstep? Up the front steps, up the marble staircase inside, and still Professor McGonagall didn't say a word to him. She wrenched open doors and marched along corridors, with Harry trotting miserably behind her. Maybe she was taking him to Dumbledore. He thought of Hagrid, expelled but allowed to stay on as gamekeeper. Perhaps he could be Hagrid's assistant. His stomach twisted as he imagined it, watching Ron and the others becoming wizards while he stumped around the grounds carrying Hagrid's bag. Professor McGonagall stopped outside a classroom. She opened the door and poked her head inside.
"Excuse me, Professor Flitwick, could I borrow wood for a moment?"
Wood? Thought Harry, bewildered. Was wood a cane she was going to use on him? But Wood turned out to be a person, a burly fifth-year boy who came out of Flitwick's class looking confused.
"Follow me, you two,"
said Professor McGonagall, and they marched on up the corridor, Wood looking curiously at Harry.
"In here!"
Professor McGonagall pointed them into a classroom that was empty except for Peeves, who was busy writing rude words on the blackboard.
"Out, Peeves!"
she barked. Peeves threw the chalk into a bin, which clanged loudly, and he swooped out, cursing. Professor McGonagall slammed the door behind him and turned to face the two boys.
"Potter, this is Oliver Wood. Wood, I've found you a seeker."
Wood's expression changed from puzzlement to delight.
"Are you serious, Professor?"
"Absolutely," said Professor McGonagall crisply. "The boys are natural. I'd never seen anything like it. Was that your first time on a broomstick, Potter?"
Harry nodded silently. He didn't have a clue what was going on, but he didn't seem to be being expelled, and some of the feelings started coming back to his legs.
"He caught that thing in his hand after a 50-foot dive," Professor McGonagall told Wood. "Didn't even scratch himself. Charlie Weasley couldn't have done it."
Wood was now looking as though all his dreams had come true at once.
"Ever seen a game of Quidditch, Potter?"
he asked excitedly.
"Wood's captain of the Gryffindor team," Professor McGonagall explained.
"He's just the build for a seeker, too," said Wood, now walking around Harry and staring at him.
"Light, speedy? We'll have to get him a decent broom, Professor. A Nimbus 2000 or a clean sweep 7, I'd say. I shall speak to Professor Dumbledore and see if we can't bend the first-year rule. Heaven knows, we need a better team than last year. Flattened in that last match by Slytherin, I couldn't look at Severus Snape in the face for weeks."
Professor McGonagall peered sternly over her glasses at Harry.
"I want to hear your training hard, Potter, or I may change my mind about punishing you."
Then she suddenly smiled.
"Your father would have been proud," she said. "He was an excellent Quidditch player himself." "You're joking!"
It was dinner time. Harry had just finished telling Ron what had happened when he'd left the grounds with Professor McGonagall. Ron had a piece of steak and kidney pie halfway to his mouth, but he'd forgotten all about it.
"Seeker?"
he said.
"But first years never! You must be the youngest house player in about..."
"A century," said Harry, shoveling pie into his mouth. He felt particularly hungry after the excitement of the afternoon. "Wood told me." Ron was so amazed, so impressed, he just sat and gaped at Harry. "I start training next week," said Harry. "Only don't tell anyone. Wood wants to keep it a secret." Fred and George Weasley now came into the hall, spotted Harry, and hurried over.
"Well done," said George in a low voice. "Wood told us. We're on the team too. Beaters."
"I tell you, we are going to win that Quidditch Cup for sure this year," said Fred.
"We haven't won since Charlie left, but this year's team is going to be brilliant. You must be good, Harry. Wood was almost skipping when he told us. Anyway, we've got to go. Lee Jordan reckons he's found a new secret passageway out of the school.
Bet it's that one behind the statue of Gregory the Smarmy that we found in our first week. See you."
Fred and George had hardly disappeared when someone far less welcome turned up. Malfoy, flanked by Crabbe and Goyle.
"Having a last meal, Potter? When are you getting the train back to the Muggles?"
"You're a lot braver now that you're back on the ground and you've got your little friends with you," said Harry coolly. There was, of course, nothing at all little about Crabbe and Goyle, but as the high table was full of teachers, neither of them could do more than crack their knuckles and scowl.
"I'd take you on any time on my own," said Malfoy. "Tonight, if you want. Wizard's duel. Wands only. No contact. What's the matter? Never heard of a wizard's duel before, I suppose?"
"Of course he has," said Ron, wheeling round. "I'm his second. Who's yours?"
Malfoy looked at Crabbe and Goyle, sizing them up.
"Crabbe," he said. "Midnight all right? We'll meet you in the trophy room. That's always unlocked."
When Malfoy had gone, Ron and Harry looked at each other.
"What is a wizard's duel?" said Harry. "And what do you mean, you're my second?"
"Well, a second's there to take over if you die," said Ron casually, getting started at last on his cold pie.
Catching the look on Harry's face, he added quickly, "But people only die in proper duels, you know, with real wizards. The most you and Malfoy'll be able to do is send sparks at each other. Neither of you knows enough magic to do any real damage. I bet he expected you to refuse, anyway."
"And what if I wave my wand and nothing happens?"
"Throw it away and punch him on the nose," Ron suggested.
"Excuse me."
They both looked up. It was Hermione Granger.
"Can't a person eat in peace in this place?" said Ron.
Hermione ignored him and spoke to Harry.
"I couldn't help overhearing what you and Malfoy were saying."
"Bet you could," Ron muttered.
"And you mustn't go wandering round the school at night. Think of the points you'll lose, Gryffindor, if you're caught. And you're bound to be. It's really very selfish of you."
"And it's really none of your business," said Harry.
"Goodbye," said Ron.
All the same, it wasn't what you'd call the perfect end to the day, Harry thought, as he lay awake much later listening to Dean and Seamus falling asleep. Neville wasn't back from the hospital wing. Ron had spent all evening giving him advice, such as, "If he tries to curse you, you'd better dodge it, because I can't remember how to block them." There was a very good chance they were going to get caught by Filch or Mrs. Norris, and Harry felt he was pushing his luck, breaking another school rule today. On the other hand, Malfoy's sneering face kept looming up out of the darkness. This was his big chance to beat Malfoy face to face. He couldn't miss it.
"11:30, Ron muttered at last. "We'd better go."
They pulled on their bathrobes, picked up their wands, and crept across the tower room, down the spiral staircase, and into the Gryffindor common room. A few embers were still glowing in the fireplace, turning all the armchairs into hunched black shadows. They had almost reached the portrait hole when a voice spoke from the chair nearest them.
"I can't believe you're going to do this, Harry."
A lamp flickered on. It was Hermione Granger wearing a pink bathrobe and a frown.
"You!" said Ron furiously. "Go back to bed." "I almost told your brother," Hermione snapped. "Percy, he's a prefect. He'd put a stop to this."
Harry couldn't believe anyone could be so interfering.
"Come on," he said to Ron.
He pushed open the portrait of the fat lady and climbed through the hole. Hermione wasn't going to give up that easily. She followed Ron through the portrait hole, hissing at them like an angry goose.
"Don't you care about Gryffindor? Do you only care about yourselves? I don't want Slytherin to win the House Cup, and you'll lose all the points I got from Professor McGonagall for knowing about switching spells."
"Go away!"
"All right, but I warned you. You just remember what I said when you're on the train home tomorrow. You're so..."
But what they were, they didn't find out. Hermione had turned to the portrait of the fat lady to get back inside and found herself facing an empty painting. The fat lady had gone on a night-time visit,
and Hermione was locked out of Gryffindor Tower.
"Now what am I going to do?"
she asked shrilly. "That's your problem," said Ron.
"We've got to go. We're going to be late."
They hadn't even reached the end of the corridor when Hermione caught up with them.
"I'm coming with you," she said. "You are not. Do you think I'm going to stand out here and wait for Filch to catch me? If he finds all three of us, I'll tell him the truth, that I was trying to stop you, and you can back me up."
"You've got some nerve," said Ron loudly.
"Shut up, both of you," said Harry sharply. "I heard something."
It was a sort of snuffling.
"Mrs. Norris?"
breathed Ron, squinting through the dark. It wasn't Mrs. Norris. It was Neville. He was curled up on the floor, fast asleep, but jerked suddenly awake as they crept nearer.
"Thank goodness you found me. I've been out here for hours. I couldn't remember the new password to get into bed."
"Keep your voice down, Neville. The password's Pig Snout. But it won't help you now. The fat lady's gone off somewhere." "How's your arm?" said Harry.
"Fine," said Neville, showing them. "Madame Pomfrey mended it in about a minute."
"Good. Well, look, Neville, we've got to be somewhere. We'll see you later."
"Don't leave me," said Neville, scrambling to his feet. "I don't want to stay here alone. The bloody Baron's been past twice already."
Ron looked at his watch and then glared furiously at Hermione and Neville.
"If either of you get us caught, I'll never rest until I've learnt the curse of the bogies Quirrell told us about and used it on you."
Hermione opened her mouth, probably to tell Ron exactly how to use the curse of the bogies, but Harry hissed at her to be quiet and beckoned them all forward. They flitted along corridors striped with bars of moonlight from the high windows. At every turn, Harry expected to run into Filch or Mrs. Norris, but they were lucky. They sped up a staircase to the third floor and tiptoed toward the trophy room. Malfoy and Crabbe weren't there yet. The crystal trophy cases glimmered where the moonlight caught them. Cups, shields, plates, and statues winked silver and gold in the darkness. They edged along the walls, keeping their eyes on the doors at either end of the room. Harry took out his wand in case Malfoy leapt in and started at once. The minutes crept by.
"He's late. Maybe he's chickened out,"
Ron whispered. Then a noise in the next room made them jump. Harry had only just raised his wand when they heard someone speak, and it wasn't Malfoy.
"Sniff around, my sweet. They might be lurking in a corner."
It was Filch speaking to Mrs. Norris.
Horror-struck, Harry waved madly at the other three to follow him as quickly as possible. They scurried silently toward the door, away from Filch's voice.
Neville's robes had barely whipped round the corner when they heard Filch enter the trophy room.
"They're in here somewhere,"
they heard him mutter.
"Probably hiding." "This way,"
Harry mouthed to the others, and, petrified, they began to creep down a long gallery full of suits of armour. They could hear Filch getting nearer. Neville suddenly let out a frightened squeak and broke into a run. He tripped, grabbed Ron around the waist, and the pair of them toppled right into a suit of armour. The clanging and crashing were enough to wake the whole castle.
"Run!"
Harry yelled, and the four of them sprinted down the gallery, not looking back to see whether Filch was following. They swung round the doorpost and galloped down one corridor, then another, Harry in the lead, without any idea where they were or where they were going. They ripped through a tapestry and found themselves in a hidden passageway, hurtled along it, and came out near their charms classroom, which they knew was miles from the trophy room.
"I think we've lost him," Harry panted,
leaning against the cold wall and wiping his forehead. Neville was bent double, wheezing and spluttering.
"I told you,"
Hermione gasped, clutching at the stitch in her chest.
"I told you."
"We've got to get back to Gryffindor Tower," said Ron, "quickly as possible."
"Malfoy tricked you," Hermione said to Harry. "You realize that, don't you? He was never going to meet you. Filch knew someone was going to be in the trophy room. Malfoy must have tipped him off."
Harry thought she was probably right, but he wasn't going to tell her that. "Let's go." It wasn't going to be that simple. They hadn't gone more than a dozen paces when a doorknob rattled and something came shooting out of a classroom in front of them. It was Peeves. He caught sight of them and gave a squeal of delight.
"Shut up, Peeves, please! You'll get us thrown out!"
Peeves cackled.
"Wandering around at midnight, Icklefirsties. Tut, tut, tut! Naughty, naughty! You'll get caughty!"
"Not if you don't give us away, Peeves, please!"
"Should tell Filch, I should,"
said Peeves in a saintly voice, but his eyes glittered wickedly.
"It's for your own good, you know."
"Get out of the way!" snapped Ron, taking a swipe at Peeves. This was a big mistake.
"Students out of bed!"
Peeves bellowed.
"Students out of bed, down the charms corridor!"
Ducking under Peeves, they ran for their lives, right to the end of the corridor where they slammed into a door, and it was locked.
"This is it," Ron moaned as they pushed helplessly at the door. "We're done for. This is the end."
They could hear footsteps, Filch running as fast as he could towards Peeves' shouts.
"Oh, move over,"
Hermione snarled. She grabbed Harry's wand, tapped the lock and whispered, "Alloa Mora." The lock clicked and the door swung open. They piled through it, shut it quickly, and pressed their ears against it, listening.
"Which way did they go, Peeves?"
Filch was saying. "Quick, tell me!"
"Say please."
"Don't mess with me, Peeves. Now where did they go?"
"Shan't say nothing if you don't say please,"
said Peeves in his annoying sing-song voice.
"All right, please."
"Nothing. Ha ha! Told you I wouldn't say nothing if you didn't say please. Ha ha! Ha ha!"
And they heard the sound of Peeves whooshing away and Filch cursing in rage.
"He thinks this door is locked," Harry whispered. "I think we'll be okay. Get off, Neville!"
For Neville had been tugging on the sleeve of Harry's bathrobe for the last minute.
"What?"
Harry turned round and saw quite clearly what. For a moment he was sure he'd walked into a nightmare. This was too much, on top of everything that had happened so far. They weren't in a room, as he had supposed. They were in a corridor, the forbidden corridor on the third floor, and now they knew why it was forbidden. They were looking straight into the eyes of a monstrous dog, a dog that filled the whole space between ceiling and floor. It had three heads, three pairs of rolling, mad eyes, three noses twitching and quivering in their direction, three drooling mouths, saliva hanging in slippery ropes from yellowish fangs. It was standing quite still, all six eyes staring at them, and Harry knew that the only reason they weren't already dead was that their sudden appearance had taken it by surprise. But it was quickly getting over that. There was no mistaking what those thunderous growls meant. Harry groped for the doorknob. Between Filch and death, he'd take Filch. They fell backwards. Harry slammed the door shut, and they ran. They almost flew back down the corridor. Filch must have hurried off to look for them somewhere else, because they didn't see him anywhere, but they hardly cared. All they wanted to do was put as much space as possible between them and that monster. They didn't stop running until they reached the portrait of the fat lady on the seventh floor.
"Where on earth have you all been?"
she asked, looking at their bathrobes hanging off their shoulders and their flushed, sweaty faces.
"Never mind that. Pigsnout, pigsnout,"
panted Harry, and the portrait swung forward. They scrambled into the common room and collapsed, trembling into armchairs. It was a while before any of them said anything. Neville, indeed, looked as if he'd never speak again.
"What do you think they're doing, keeping a thing like that locked up in a school?"
said Ron finally.
"If any dog needs exercise, that one does."
Hermione had got both her breath and her bad temper back again.
"You don't use your eyes, any of you, do you?"
she snapped.
"Didn't you see what it was standing on?"
"The floor?" Harry suggested. "I wasn't looking at its feet. I was too busy with its heads."
"No, not the floor. It was standing on a trap door. It's obviously guarding something."
She stood up, glaring at them.
"I hope you're pleased with yourselves. We could all have been killed. Or worse, expelled. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed."
Ron stared after her, his mouth open.
"No, we don't mind," he said.
"You'd think we'd dragged her along, wouldn't you?" But Hermione had given Harry something else to think about as he climbed back into bed. The dog was guarding something. What had Hagrid said? Gringotts was the safest place in the world for something you wanted to hide, except, perhaps, Hogwarts. It looked as though Harry had found out where the grubby little package from Vault 713 was. Chapter 10, Halloween. Malfoy couldn't believe his eyes when he saw that Harry and Ron were still at Hogwarts the next day, looking tired but perfectly cheerful. Indeed, by the next morning, Harry and Ron thought that meeting the three-headed dog had been an excellent adventure, and they were quite keen to have another one. In the meantime, Harry filled Ron in about the package that seemed to have been moved from Gringotts to Hogwarts, and they spent a lot of time wondering what could possibly need such heavy protection. "It's either really valuable or really dangerous," said Ron. "Or both," said Harry. But as all they knew for sure about the mysterious object was that it was about 2 inches long, they didn't have much chance of guessing what it was without further clues. Neither Neville nor Hermione showed the slightest interest in what lay underneath the dog and the trapdoor. All Neville cared about now was never going near the dog again.
Hermione was now refusing to speak to Harry and Ron, but she was such a bossy know-it-all that they saw this as an added bonus. All they really wanted now was a way of getting back at Malfoy, and to their great delight, just such a thing arrived in the mail about a week later.
As the owls flooded into the great hall as usual, everyone's attention was caught at once by a long, thin package carried by 6 large screech owls. Harry was just as interested as everyone else to see what was in this large parcel, and was amazed when the owls soared down and dropped it right in front of him, knocking his bacon to the floor. They had hardly fluttered out of the way when another owl dropped a letter on top of the parcel. Harry ripped open the letter first, which was lucky, because it said, "Do not open the parcel at the table. It contains your new Nimbus 2000, but I don't want anybody knowing you've got a broomstick, or they'll all want one. Oliver Wood will meet you tonight on the Quidditch field at 7 o'clock for your first training session. Professor M. McGonagall." Harry had difficulty hiding his glee as he handed the note to Ron to read.
"A Nimbus 2000?" Ron moaned enviously. "I've never even touched one."
They left the hall quickly, wanting to unwrap the broomstick in private before their first class. But halfway across the entrance hall, they found the way upstairs barred by Crabbe and Goyle. Malfoy seized the package from Harry and felt it.
"That's a broomstick," he said, throwing it back to Harry with a mixture of jealousy and spite on his face. "You'll be in for it this time, Potter. First years aren't allowed them."
Ron couldn't resist it.
"It's not any old broomstick," he said. "It's a Nimbus 2000. "What did you say you've got at home, Malfoy? A Comet 260?
Ron grinned at Harry. "Comets look flashy, but they're not in the same league as the Nimbus."
"What would you know about it, Weasley? You couldn't afford half the handle," Malfoy snapped back. "I suppose you and your brothers have to save up twig by twig."
Before Ron could answer, Professor Flitwick appeared at Malfoy's elbow.
"Not arguing, I hope, boys,"
he squeaked.
"Potter's been sent a broomstick, Professor," said Malfoy quickly.
"Yes, yes, that's right,"
said Professor Flitwick, beaming at Harry.
"Professor McGonagall told me all about the special circumstances, Potter. And what model is it?"
"A Nimbus 2000, sir," said Harry, fighting not to laugh at the look of horror on Malfoy's face. "And it's really thanks to Malfoy here that I've got it," he added.
Harry and Ron headed upstairs, smothering their laughter at Malfoy's obvious rage and confusion.
"Well, it's true," Harry chortled as they reached the top of the marble staircase. "If he hadn't stolen Neville's remember-all, I wouldn't be on the team. So I suppose you think that's a reward for breaking rules,"
came an angry voice from just behind them. Hermione was stomping up the stairs, looking disapprovingly at the package in Harry's hand.
"I thought you weren't speaking to us," said Harry.
"Yes, don't stop now," said Ron. "It's doing us so much good." Hermione marched away with her nose in the air. Harry had a lot of trouble keeping his mind on his lessons that day. It kept wandering up to the dormitory where his new broomstick was lying under his bed, or straying off to the Quidditch field where he'd be learning to play that night. He bolted his dinner that evening without noticing what he was eating, and then rushed upstairs with Ron to unwrap the Nimbus 2000 at last.
"Wow!"
Ron sighed as the broomstick rolled onto Harry's bedspread. Even Harry, who knew nothing about the different brooms, thought it looked wonderful. Sleek and shiny, with a mahogany handle, it had a long tail of neat, straight twigs, and Nimbus 2000 written in gold near the top. As 7 o'clock drew nearer, Harry left the castle and set off in the dusk toward the Quidditch field. He'd never been inside the stadium before. Hundreds of seats were raised in stands around the field so that the spectators were high enough to see what was going on. At either end of the field were three golden poles with hoops on the end. They reminded Harry of the little plastic sticks Muggle children blew bubbles through, except that they were 50 feet high. Too eager to fly again to wait for wood, Harry mounted his broomstick and kicked off from the ground. What a feeling! He swooped in and out of the goalpost and then sped up and down the field. The Nimbus 2000 turned wherever he wanted at his lightest touch.
"Hey, Potter, come down!"
Oliver Wood had arrived. He was carrying a large wooden crate under his arm. Harry landed next to him.
"Very nice," said Wood, his eyes glinting. "I see what McGonagall meant. You really are a natural. I'm just going to teach you the rules this evening. Then you'll be joining team practice 3 times a week.
He opened the crate. Inside were 4 different sized balls.
"Right," said Wood. "Now, Quidditch is easy enough to understand, even if it's not too easy to play. There are 7 players on each side. 3 of them are called chasers."
3 chasers, Harry repeated, as Wood took out a bright red ball about the size of a soccer ball.
"This ball's called the quaffle," said Wood. "The chasers throw the quaffle to each other and try to get it through one of the hoops to score a goal. 10 points every time the quaffle goes through one of the hoops. Follow me?"
"The chasers throw the quaffle and put it through the hoops to score," Harry recited.
"So that's sort of like basketball on broomsticks with 6 hoops, isn't it?"
"What's basketball?" said Wood curiously. "Never mind," said Harry quickly.
"Now, there's another player on each side who's called the keeper. I'm keeper for Gryffindor. I have to fly around our hoops and stop the other team from scoring."
3 chasers, 1 keeper, said Harry, who was determined to remember it all, and they play with the quaffle.
"Okay, got that. So what are they for?"
He pointed at the 3 balls left inside the box.
"I'll show you now," said Wood. "Take this."
He handed Harry a small club, a bit like a short baseball bat.
"I'm going to show you what the bludgers do," Wood said. "These 2 are the bludgers."
He showed Harry 2 identical balls, jet black and slightly smaller than the red quaffle. Harry noticed that they seemed to be straining to escape the straps holding them inside the box.
"Stand back," Wood warned Harry. He bent down and freed one of the bludgers. At once the black ball rose high in the air and then pelted straight at Harry's face.
Harry swung at it with the bat to stop it from breaking his nose and sent it zigzagging away into the air. It zoomed around their heads and then shot at Wood, who dived on top of it and managed to pin it to the ground.
"See?" Wood panted, forcing the struggling bludger back into the crate and strapping it down safely. "The bludgers rocket around trying to knock players off their brooms. That's why you have 2 beaters on each team. The Weasley twins are ours. It's their job to protect their side from the bludgers and try and knock them toward the other team. So, think you've got all that?"
3 chasers try and score with a quaffle. The keeper guards the goalpost. The beaters keep the bludgers away from their team, Harry reeled off.
"Very good," said Wood. Have the bludgers ever killed anyone?"
Harry asked, hoping he sounded offhand.
"Never at Hogwarts. We've had a couple of broken jaws, but nothing worse than that. Now, the last member of the team is the Seeker. That's you. And you don't have to worry about the quaffle or the bludgers,
unless they crack my head open."
"Don't worry. The Weasleys are more than a match for the bludgers. I mean, they're like a pair of human bludgers themselves."
Wood reached into the crate and took out the 4th and last ball.
Compared with the quaffle and the bludgers, it was tiny, about the size of a large walnut. It was bright gold and had little fluttering silver wings.
"This," said Wood, "is the golden snitch, and it's the most important ball of the lot.
It's very hard to catch because it's so fast and difficult to see. It's the seeker's job to catch it. You've got to weave in and out of the chasers, beaters, bludgers and quaffle to get it before the other team's seeker, because whichever seeker catches the snitch wins his team an extra 150 points, so they nearly always win. That's why seekers get fouled so much. A game of Quidditch only ends when the snitch is caught, so it can go on for ages. I think the record is 3 months. They had to keep bringing on substitutes so the players could get some sleep. Well, that's it. Any questions? Harry shook his head. He understood what he had to do, all right. It was doing it that was going to be the problem. We won't practice with the snitch yet, said Wood, carefully shutting it back inside the crate. It's too dark. We might lose it. Let's try you out with a few of these. He pulled a bag of ordinary golf balls out of his pocket, and a few minutes later he and Harry were up in the air, Wood throwing the golf balls as hard as he could in every direction for Harry to catch. Harry didn't miss a single one, and Wood was delighted. After half an hour, night had really fallen, and they couldn't carry on. "That Quidditch couple have our name on it this year," said Wood happily as they trudged back up to the castle. "I wouldn't be surprised if you turn out better than Charlie Weasley, and he could have played for England if he hadn't gone off chasing dragons." Perhaps it was because he was now so busy, what with Quidditch practice 3 evenings a week on top of all his homework, but Harry could hardly believe it when he realized that he'd already been at Hogwarts 2 months. The castle felt more like home than Privet Drive ever had. His lessons, too, were becoming more and more interesting now that they had mastered the basics. On Halloween morning they woke to the delicious smell of baking pumpkin wafting through the corridors. Even better, Professor Flitwick announced in charms that he thought they were ready to start making objects fly, something they'd all been dying to try since they'd seen him make Neville's toad zoom around the classroom. Professor Flitwick put the class into pairs to practice. Harry's partner was Seamus Finnegan, which was a relief because Neville had been trying to catch his eye. Ron, however, was to be working with Hermione Granger. It was hard to tell whether Ron or Hermione was angrier about this. She hadn't spoken to either of them since the day Harry's broomstick had arrived.
"Now don't forget that nice wrist movement we've been practicing," squeaked Professor Flitwick, perched on top of his pile of books as usual. "Swish and flick, remember, swish and flick, and saying the magic words properly is very important, too. Never forget Wizard Baruffio, who said S instead of F, and found himself on the floor with a buffalo on his chest."
It was very difficult. Harry and Seamus swished and flicked, but the feather they were supposed to be sending skyward just lay on the desktop. Seamus got so impatient that he prodded it with his wand and set fire to it. Harry had to put it out with his hat. Ron, at the next table, wasn't having much more luck. "Wingardium Leviosa!" he shouted, waving his long arms like a windmill. "You're saying it wrong!" Harry heard Hermione snap. "It's Wingardium Leviosa! Make the gar nice and long!" "You do it, then, if you're so clever," Ron snarled. Hermione rolled up the sleeves of her gown, flicked her wand, and said, "Wingardium Leviosa!" Their feather rose off the desk and hovered about 4 feet above their heads.
"Oh, well done!" cried Professor Flitwick, clapping. "Everyone see here! Miss Granger's done it!"
Ron was in a very bad mood by the end of the class. "It's no wonder no one can stand her," he said to Harry as they pushed their way into the crowded corridor. "She's a nightmare, honestly." Someone knocked into Harry as they hurried past him. It was Hermione. Harry caught a glimpse of her face and was startled to see that she was in tears. "I think she heard you." "So?" said Ron, but he looked a bit uncomfortable. "She must have noticed she's got no friends." Hermione didn't turn up for the next class and wasn't seen all afternoon. On their way down to the Great Hall for the Halloween feast, Harry and Ron overheard Parvati Patil telling her friend Lavender that Hermione was crying in the girl's bathroom and wanted to be left alone. Ron looked still more awkward at this, but a moment later they had entered the Great Hall, where the Halloween decorations put Hermione out of their minds. A 1,000 live bats fluttered from the walls and ceiling,
while a thousand more swooped over the tables in low black clouds, making the candles in the pumpkins stutter. The feast appeared suddenly on the golden plates, as it had at the start of term banquet. Harry was just helping himself to a baked potato when Professor Quirrell came sprinting into the hall, his turban askew and terror on his face. Everyone stared as he reached Professor Dumbledore's chair, slumped against the table, and gasped, "Troll! In the dungeons! Thought you ought to know!" He then sank to the floor in a dead faint. There was an uproar. It took several purple firecrackers exploding from the end of Professor Dumbledore's wand to bring silence. "Prefects," he rumbled, "lead your houses back to the dormitories immediately." Percy was in his element. "Follow me. Stick together, first years. No need to fear the troll if you follow my orders. Stay close behind me now. Make way. First years coming through. Excuse me. I'm a prefect." "How could a troll get in?" Harry asked as they climbed the stairs. "Don't ask me. They're supposed to be really stupid," said Ron. "Maybe Peeves let it in for a Halloween joke." They passed different groups of people hurrying in different directions. As they jostled their way through a crowd of confused Hufflepuffs, Harry suddenly grabbed Ron's arm. "I just thought. Hermione. What about her? She doesn't know about the troll." Ron bit his lip. "Oh, all right," he snapped. "But Percy had better not see us." Ducking down, they joined the Hufflepuffs going the other way, slipped down a deserted side corridor, and hurried off toward the girls' bathroom. They had just turned the corner when they heard quick footsteps behind them. "Percy!" hissed Ron, pulling Harry behind a large stone griffin. Peering around it, however, they saw not Percy, but Snape. He crossed the corridor and disappeared from view.
"What's he doing?" Harry whispered. "Why isn't he down in the dungeons with the rest of the teachers? Search me."
Quietly as possible, they crept along the next corridor after Snape's fading footsteps.
"He's heading for the third floor," Harry said,
but Ron held up his hand.
"Can you smell something?"
Harry sniffed, and a foul stench reached his nostrils, a mixture of old socks and the kind of public toilet no one seems to clean. And then they heard it, a low grunting and the shuffling footfalls of gigantic feet. Ron pointed. At the end of a passage to the left, something huge was moving toward them. They shrank into the shadows and watched as it emerged into a patch of moonlight.
It was a horrible sight. 12 feet tall, its skin was a dull granite grey, its great lumpy body like a boulder with its small bald head perched on top like a coconut.
It had short legs, thick as tree trunks, with flat horny feet. The smell coming from it was incredible. It was holding a huge wooden club which dragged along the floor because its arms were so long. The troll stopped next to a doorway and peered inside. It waggled its long ears, making up its tiny mind, then slouched slowly into the room.
"The key's in the lock," Harry muttered. "We could lock it in." "Good idea," said Ron nervously.
They edged toward the open door, mouths dry, praying the troll wasn't about to come out of it. With one great leap, Harry managed to grab the key, slam the door, and lock it.
"Yes!"
Flushed with their victory, they started to run back up the passage, but as they reached the corner, they heard something that made their hearts stop, a high, petrified scream, and it was coming from the chamber they'd just chained up.
"Oh, no," said Ron, pale as the bloody baron. "It's the girls' bathroom," Harry gasped. "Hermione," they said together.
It was the last thing they wanted to do, but what choice did they have? Wheeling around, they sprinted back to the door and turned the key, fumbling in their panic. Harry pulled the door open and they ran inside. Hermione Granger was shrinking against the wall opposite, looking as if she was about to faint. The troll was advancing on her, knocking the sinks off the walls as it went.
"Confuse it," Harry said desperately to Ron, and, seizing a tap, he threw it as hard as he could against the wall.
The troll stopped a few feet from Hermione. It lumbered around, blinking stupidly to see what had made the noise. Its mean little eyes saw Harry. It hesitated, then made for him instead, lifting its club as it went.
"Oi, Peabrain!" yelled Ron from the other side of the chamber, and he threw a metal pipe at it.
The troll didn't even seem to notice the pipe hitting its shoulder, but it heard the yell and paused again. turning its ugly snout toward Ron instead, giving Harry time to run around it.
"Come on, run, run!"
Harry yelled at Hermione, trying to pull her toward the door, but she couldn't move. She was still flat against the wall, her mouth open with terror. The shouting and the echoes seemed to be driving the troll berserk. It roared again and started toward Ron, who was nearest and had no way to escape. Harry then did something that was both very brave and very stupid. He took a great running jump and managed to fasten his arms around the troll's neck from behind. The troll couldn't feel Harry hanging there, but even a troll will notice if you stick a long bit of wood up its nose. And Harry's wand had still been in his hand when he had jumped. It had gone straight up one of the troll's nostrils. Howling with pain, the troll twisted and flailed its club, with Harry clinging on for dear life. Any second the troll was going to rip him off or catch him a terrible blow with a club. Hermione had sunk to the floor in fright. Ron pulled out his own wand. Not knowing what he was going to do, he heard himself cry the first spell that came into his head, "Wingardium Leviosa!" The club flew suddenly out of the troll's hand, rose high, high up into the air, turned slowly over, and dropped with a sickening crack onto its owner's head. The troll swayed on the spot and then fell flat on its face with a thud that made the whole room tremble. Harry got to his feet. He was shaking and out of breath. Ron was standing there with his wand still raised, staring at what he had done. It was Hermione who spoke first.
"Is it dead?"
"I don't think so," said Harry. "I think it's just been knocked out." He bent down and pulled his wand out of the troll's nose. It was covered in what looked like lumpy grey glue.
"Ugh, troll boogers."
He wiped it on the troll's trousers. A sudden slamming and loud footsteps made the three of them look up. They hadn't realized what a racket they had been making, but of course someone downstairs must have heard the crashes and the troll's roars. A moment later, Professor McGonagall had come bursting into the room, closely followed by Snape, with Quirrell bringing up the rear. Quirrell took one look at the troll, let out a faint whimper, and sat quickly down on a toilet, clutching his heart. Snape bent over the troll. Professor McGonagall was looking at Ron and Harry. Harry had never seen her look so angry. Her lips were white. Hopes of winning 50 points for Gryffindor faded quickly from Harry's mind.
"What on earth were you thinking of?"
said Professor McGonagall, with cold fury in her voice. Harry looked at Ron, who was still standing with his wand in the air.
"You're lucky you weren't killed. Why aren't you in your dormitory?"
Snape gave Harry a swift, piercing look. Harry looked at the floor. He wished Ron would put his wand down. Then a small voice came out of the shadows.
"Please, Professor McGonagall, they were looking for me."
"Miss Granger?"
Hermione had managed to get to her feet at last.
"I went looking for the troll because I thought I could deal with it on my own, you know, because I've read all about them."
Ron dropped his wand. Hermione Granger telling a downright lie to a teacher?
"If they hadn't found me, I'd be dead now. Harry stuck his wand up its nose and Ron knocked it out with his own club. They didn't have time to come and fetch anyone. It was about to finish me off when they arrived."
Harry and Ron tried to look as though this story wasn't new to them.
"Well, in that case,"
said Professor McGonagall, staring at the three of them,
"Miss Granger, you foolish girl, how could you think of tackling a mountain troll on your own?"
Hermione hung her head. Harry was speechless. Hermione was the last person to do anything against the rules, and here she was, pretending she had to get them out of trouble. It was as if Snape had started handing out sweets.
"Miss Granger, 5 points will be taken from Gryffindor for this," said Professor McGonagall. "I'm very disappointed in you. If you're not hurt at all, you'd better get off to Gryffindor Tower. Students are finishing the feast in their houses."
Hermione left. Professor McGonagall turned to Harry and Ron.
"Well, I still say you were lucky, but not many first years could have taken on a full-grown mountain troll. You each win Gryffindor 5 points. Professor Dumbledore will be informed of this. You may go."
They hurried out of the chamber and didn't speak at all until they had climbed 2 floors up. It was a relief to be away from the smell of the troll, quite apart from anything else. "'We should have gotten more than 10 points,' Ron grumbled. "'5, you mean, once she's taken off Hermione's?' "'Good of her to get us out of trouble like that,' Ron admitted. "'Mind you, we did save her. "'She might not have needed saving if we hadn't locked the thing in with her,' Harry reminded him. They had reached the portrait of the fat lady. "'Pigsnout!' they said, and entered. The common room was packed and noisy. Everyone was eating the food that had been sent up. Hermione, however, stood alone by the door, waiting for them. There was a very embarrassed pause. Then, none of them looking at each other, they all said, "Thanks," and hurried off to get plates. But from that moment on, Hermione Granger became their friend. There are some things you can't share without ending up liking each other, and knocking out a 12-foot mountain troll is one of them. Chapter 11 Quidditch. As they entered November, the weather turned very cold. The mountains around the school became icy grey, and the lake like chilled steel. Every morning the ground was covered in frost. Hagrid could be seen from the upstairs windows defrosting broomsticks on the Quidditch field, bundled up in a long moleskin overcoat, rabbit fur gloves, and enormous beaver-skin boots. The Quidditch season had begun. On Saturday, Harry would be playing in his first match after weeks of training, Gryffindor versus Slytherin. If Gryffindor won, they would move up into second place in the House Championship. Hardly anyone had seen Harry play because Wood had decided that, as their secret weapon, Harry should be kept, well, secret. But the news that he was playing Seeker had leaked out somehow, and Harry didn't know which was worse. People telling him he'd be brilliant, or people telling him they'd be running around underneath him holding a mattress. It was really lucky that Harry now had Hermione as a friend. He didn't know how he'd have gotten through all his homework without her, what with all the last-minute Quidditch practice Wood was making them do. She'd also lent him Quidditch Through the Ages, which turned out to be a very interesting read. Harry learnt that there were 700 ways of committing a Quidditch foul, and that all of them had happened during a World Cup match in 1473. The Seekers were usually the smallest and fastest players, and that most serious Quidditch accidents seemed to happen to them. That although people rarely died playing Quidditch, referees had been known to vanish and turn up months later in the Sahara Desert. Hermione had become a bit more relaxed about breaking rules since Harry and Ron had saved her from the mountain troll, and she was much nicer for it. The day before Harry's first Quidditch match, the three of them were out in the freezing courtyard during break, and she had conjured them up a bright blue fire that could be carried around in a jam jar. They were standing with their backs to it, getting warm, when Snape crossed the yard. Harry noticed at once that Snape was limping. Harry, Ron, and Hermione moved closer together to block the fire from view. They were sure it wouldn't be allowed. Unfortunately, something about their guilty faces caught Snape's eye. He limped over. He hadn't seen the fire, but he seemed to be looking for a reason to tell them off anyway. "What's that you've got there, Potter?" It was Quidditch Through the Ages. Harry showed him. "Library books are not to be taken outside the school," said Snape. "Give it to me. 5 points from Gryffindor." "He's just made that rule up," Harry muttered angrily, as Snape limped away. "Wonder what's wrong with his leg." "Dunno, but I hope it's really hurting him," said Ron bitterly. The Gryffindor common room was very noisy that evening. Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat together next to a window. Hermione was checking Harry and Ron's charms homework for them. She would never let them copy. "How will you learn?" But by asking her to read it through, they got the right answers anyway. Harry felt restless. He wanted Quidditch Through the Ages back, to take his mind off his nerves about tomorrow. Why should he be afraid of Snape? Getting up, he told Ron and Hermione he was going to ask Snape if he could have it. "Better you than me," they said together. But Harry had an idea that Snape wouldn't refuse if there were other teachers listening. He made his way down to the staff room and knocked. There was no answer. He knocked again. Nothing. Perhaps Snape had left the book in there. It was worth a try. He pushed the door ajar and peered inside, and a horrible scene met his eyes. Snape and Filch were inside alone. Snape was holding his robes above his knees. One of his legs was bloody and mangled. Filch was handing Snape bandages.
"Blasted thing!" Snape was saying. "How are you supposed to keep your eyes on all three heads at once?"
Harry tried to shut the door quietly, but...
"Potter!"
Snape's face was twisted with fury as he dropped his robes quickly to hide his leg. Harry gulped.
"I just wondered if I could have my book back."
"Get out! Out!"
Harry left before Snape could take any more points from Gryffindor. He sprinted back upstairs.
"Did you get it?" Ron asked as Harry joined them.
"What's the matter?" In a low whisper, Harry told them what he'd seen.
"You know what this means," he finished breathlessly. "He tried to get past that three-headed dog at Halloween. That's where he was going when we saw him. He's after whatever it's guarding, and I'd bet my broomstick he let that troll in to make a diversion."
Hermione's eyes were wide.
"No, he wouldn't," she said. "I know he's not very nice, but he wouldn't try and steal something Dumbledore was keeping safe."
"Honestly, Hermione, you think all teachers are saints or something," snapped Ron. "I'm with Harry. I wouldn't put anything past Snape. But what's he after? What's that dog guarding?" Harry went to bed with his head buzzing with the same question. Neville was snoring loudly, but Harry couldn't sleep. He tried to empty his mind. He needed to sleep. He had to. He had his first Quidditch match in a few hours. But the expression on Snape's face when Harry had seen his leg wasn't easy to forget. The next morning dawned very bright and cold. The great hall was full of the delicious smell of fried sausages and the cheerful chatter of everyone looking forward to a good Quidditch match.
"You've got to eat some breakfast. I don't want anything.
Just a bit of toast," wheedled Hermione.
"I'm not hungry." Harry felt terrible. In an hour's time, he'd be walking onto the field.
"Harry, you need your strength," said Seamus Finnegan. "Seekers are always the ones who get clobbered by the other team."
"Thanks, Seamus," said Harry, watching Seamus pile ketchup on his sausages.
By 11 o'clock, the whole school seemed to be out in the stands around the Quidditch pitch. Many students had binoculars. The seats might be raised high in the air, but it was still difficult to see what was going on sometimes. Ron and Hermione joined Neville, Seamus, and Dean, the West Ham fan, up in the top row. As a surprise for Harry, they had painted a large banner on one of the sheets Scabbers had ruined. It said, "Potter for President," and Dean, who was good at drawing, had done a large Gryffindor lion underneath. Then Hermione had performed a tricky little charm so that the paint flashed different colours. Meanwhile, in the locker room, Harry and the rest of the team were changing into their scarlet Quidditch robes. Slytherin would be playing in green. Wood cleared his throat for silence.
"Okay, men," he said. "And women," said Chaser Angelina Johnson. "And women," Wood agreed. "This is it."
"The big one," said Fred Weasley.
"The one we've all been waiting for," said George.
"We know Oliver's speech by heart," Fred told Harry. "We were on the team last year."
"Shut up, you two," said Wood.
"This is the best team Gryffindor's had in years. We're going to win. I know it." He glared at them all as if to say, "or else."
"Right, it's time. Good luck, all of you."
Harry followed Fred and George out of the locker room, and hoping his knees weren't going to give way, walked onto the field to loud cheers. Madame Hooch was refereeing. She stood in the middle of the field, waiting for the two teams, her broom in her hand.
"Now, I want a nice, fair game, all of you," she said, once they were all gathered around her.
Harry noticed that she seemed to be speaking particularly to the Slytherin captain, Marcus Flint, a sixth year. Harry thought Flint looked as if he had some troll blood in him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the fluttering banner high above, flashing "Potter for President" over the crowd. His heart skipped. He felt braver.
Mount your brooms, please.
Harry clambered onto his Nimbus 2000. Madam Hooch gave a loud blast on her silver whistle. 15 brooms rose up, high, high into the air. They were off.
And the quaffle is taken immediately by Angelina Johnson of Gryffindor. What an excellent chaser that girl is, and rather attractive, too. Jordan!
Sorry, Professor. The Weasley twins' friend, Lee Jordan, was doing the commentary for the match, closely watched by Professor McGonagall.
And she's really belting along up there. A neat pass to Alicia Spinett, a good friend of Oliver Wood's. Last year, only a reserve. Back to Johnson. And no, the Slytherins have taken the quaffle. Slytherin captain Marcus Flint gains the quaffle, and off he goes. Flint flying like an eagle up there. He's going to score. No, stopped by an excellent move by Gryffindor keeper Wood. And the Gryffindors take the quaffle. That's chaser Katie Bell of the Gryffindor there. Nice dive around Flint. Off, up the field, and ooch! That must have hurt. Hit in the back of the head by a bludger. Quaffle taken by the Slytherins. That's Adrian Pusey speeding off toward the goalpost, but he's blocked by a second bludger, sent his way by Fred or George Weasley, can't tell which. Nice play by the Gryffindor beater, anyway, and Johnson back in possession of the quaffle. A clear field ahead, and off she goes. She's really flying, dodges a speeding bludger. The goalposts are ahead. Oh, come on now, Angelina. Keeper Bletchley dives, misses. Gryffindor's score!
Gryffindor cheers filled the cold air with howls and moans from the Slytherins.
Budge up there, move along.
Hagrid. Ron and Hermione squeezed together to give Hagrid enough space to join them.
"Been watching from Miot?"
said Hagrid, patting a large pair of binoculars round his neck.
"But it isn't the same as being in the crowd. No sign of the Snitch yet, eh?"
"Nope," said Ron. "Harry hasn't had much to do yet."
"Kept out of trouble, though, that's something,"
said Hagrid, raising his binoculars and peering skyward at the speck that was Harry. Way up above them, Harry was gliding over the game, squinting about for some sign of the Snitch. This was part of his and Wood's game plan. "Keep out of the way until you catch sight of the Snitch," Wood had said. "We don't want you attacked before you have to be." When Angelina had scored, Harry had done a couple of loop-the-loops to let off his feelings. Now he was back to staring around for the Snitch. Once he caught sight of a flash of gold, but it was just a reflection from one of the Weasley's wristwatches, and once a bludger decided to come pelting his way, more like a cannonball than anything, but Harry dodged it, and Fred Weasley came chasing after it.
"All right there, Harry!"
he had time to yell as he beat the bludger furiously towards Marcus Flint.
"Slytherin in possession!" Lee Jordan was saying, "Chaser Pusey ducks two bludgers, two Weasleys, and Chaser Bell, and speeds towards the..." "Wait a minute! Was that the Snitch?"
A murmur ran through the crowd as Adrian Pusey dropped the quaffle, too busy looking over his shoulder at the flash of gold that had passed his left ear. Harry saw it. In a great rush of excitement, he dived downward after the streak of gold. Slytherin seeker Terence Higgs had seen it, too. Neck and neck they hurled towards the Snitch. All the chasers seemed to have forgotten what they were supposed to be doing as they hung in mid-air to watch. Harry was faster than Higgs. He could see the little round ball, wings fluttering, darting up ahead. He put on an extra spurt of speed. Wham! A roar of rage echoed from the Gryffindors below. Marcus Flint had blocked Harry on purpose, and Harry's broom spun off course, Harry holding on for dear life.
"Foul!"
screamed the Gryffindors. Madam Hooch spoke angrily to Flint and then ordered a free shot at the goalpost for Gryffindor. But in all the confusion, of course, the golden Snitch had disappeared from sight again. Down in the stands, Dean Thomas was yelling, "Send him off, ref! Red card!" "What are you talking about, Dean?" said Ron.
"Red card," said Dean furiously. "In soccer, you get shown the red card and you're out of the game."
"But this isn't soccer, Dean," Ron reminded him. Hagrid, however, was on Dean's side.
"They ought to change the rules. Flint could have knocked Harry out of the air."
Lee Jordan was finding it difficult not to take sides.
"So, after that obvious and disgusting bit of cheating..."
"Jordan?" growled Professor McGonagall.
"I mean, after that
open and revolting foul. Jordan, I'm warning you.
All right, all right. Flint nearly kills the Gryffindor Seeker, which could happen to anyone, I'm sure. So, a penalty to Gryffindor. Taken by Spinnet, who puts it away. No trouble, and we continue play. Gryffindor still in